not been able to win a series against anybody else that has a winning record on the road this year. Now, fortunately, the Padres on the other side have, you know, just destroyed the bad teams this year, and that is the secret to their success. And, you know, if you keep destroying the bad teams, you still can get where you want to go. Despite the loss today, despite the loss in the series, Padres are currently a very comfortable 6.5 games ahead of Cincinnati for the final wild card. It is not lost on me, Scraby, nor I'm sure is it lost on you or anybody else tuning into this program today that the game this afternoon came down to the number two hitter in the lineup for the Padres batting with two outs in the ninth inning and a chance to tie or maybe win the game. And the fact that today that number two hitter was not Luis Arraez. He was not in the starting lineup today. He did come in as a pinch hitter and ground out to lead off the ninth inning. But after that, Jake Cronenworth doubled, and with two outs, Fernando Tatis Jr. doubled to make the score 4-3. And there was Tatis, juicy, sitting out there at second base before he stole third and got even a little closer.
I know.
But, and I, you know, it's just not lost on me. It is hilarious to me that the narrative around here, or at least in my world around here, has been that Luis Arraez absolutely, positively, without question, should not bat second. That particular decision, that particular lineup construction by Mike Schilt and the Padres is the one thing that is holding this team back from doing better things even. And if we could get Arraez out of the two hole, life would be good. Well, he wasn't there today. And so it was that Ramon Laureano was in the two hole. You couldn't ask for a better guy to be
up.
Top Ramon, who's done everything. He had a 1,004 OPS coming into the game since joining the Padres. But it didn't happen for Top Ramon today. He went 0-4, struck out twice, and grounded out to end the ball game. And we'll see. Was this lineup what Mike Schilt wants to use going forward? I don't think so. I think he was just giving Arraez a day off. But, yeah, we'll see. If he's back in the two spot again on Friday night when they play in Minnesota, which is one of the places Arraez previously won a batting title. What say you, Mr. Scraby, about all of this irony today?
I do love the irony, and I do love.
How can
I
it
love
be any more delicious than that?
I mean, we were all watching it in the back on the big screen. We're all saying, like, no way. It's going to come down to
the number two hitter.
And it was a couple weeks ago that it was like Ryan O'Hearn, and then he hits a bunch of home runs. And so it keeps. But what I think is, I want to explain again, Chris. No one wants Luis Arraez out of the lineup. They just want him lower.
Oh, I don't know that no one does. I think people actually do want him out of the lineup. They
I'm
want
just
going
to talk to the people
good.
That are actually reasonable and look at this
realistically. The reasonable ones just want him moved down in the lineup. They do not want him in the number two spot.
In the last 15 games, Chris, he's hitting .207,
yeah,
four RBIs,
there is
two
nothing.
Walks.
There is nothing that Luis Arraez has done at the plate that could be any worse than what Xander Bogaerts was doing at the plate for the first 2.5 months of the season. And I find it hilarious that for the first 2.5 months of the season, Xander Bogaerts was the whipping boy.
He was.
For the San Diego Padre fans. Was the dumbest, worst contract in baseball history. They were only playing him because of that contract. He was batting either fifth, some days sixth, pretty much in an RBI position, even though he had a batting average with runners in scoring position at less than 200. Every loss, it seemed to me, for the first 2.5 months of the season was blamed and put squarely on the shoulders of the underperforming disaster that was Xander Bogaerts.
And it was fair because it was underperforming and it was a disaster.
And now Xander Bogaerts is totally out of the crosshairs. Doesn't matter what he does anymore. Now we have to, you know, we have changed it, and it's Luis Arraez. And I will ask again, why is anybody even remotely upset? Could the team be, right now, could the team have a record of 134-0? Yes, I guess they could. They could be better than what they are. But what is why are people angry in the first place? This team is right there with 29, 30 games to go.
You know,
just hilarious to me that people are finding ways to be angry about the construction of the lineup, the usage of the bullpen, which all year long has been spectacular, but all of a sudden now, we're stupid for bringing Estrada in. We're stupid for bringing Jason Adam in last night. I saw people saying, how can you bring him in that situation?
Well, that's crazy.
What do you want?
Well, that's crazy. It was
He's
a big
one
moment
of the
best
pitchers in all of baseball.
It was a big moment.
He gave up a home run.
I have no issues with the usage of him last night.
I mean, David Morgan should not have been in the other day to give up five runs.
But who are you going to use then?
Suarez shouldn't have been in the one Dodger game to give up the home run to Betts. My point is, what is going to please everybody other than the fact that the team just wins every single game from here on out?
There it is.
You know, on a lot of parts, Scraby, and I've said it 100 times, I love the passion of the fans. I love the fact that everybody cares. But sometimes I think people are a little bit unrealistic here.
I don't disagree that some people are a little unrealistic. Luis Arraez, I know you have it in your head that everybody hates him. Some hate him, and I don't even pay attention to those because I do know that he is a valuable player. But when he pinch hits in the ninth inning and he hits a weak grounder to shortstop, that's kind of what everybody's thinking. He's not the same player this year.
How many? What are pinch hitting statistics in Major League Baseball?
Oh, I'm not saying that he's
guys hit about 200.
Oh, I'm not saying that pinch hitting is easy or anything like that.
But I was saying
that result is an example of why we want to move down.
But then you hate every player on the team. Machado was 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts today. You got to move him down. He didn't come through.
I will say this, too.
This is ridiculous that we're getting all the way to this point. Felix Fermin, I believe, has been one of the...
Freddie
Fermin. I always call him Felix. Freddie Fermin, I believe, was one of the guys we liked the absolute most. He struck out in a crucial situation that could have tied the game today. So, do we just say that he will never come through and he's awful?
You're not understanding.
How am I not understanding? You're telling me that the Arraez ground out is an example of why people hate him. Okay. If one out is an example why we hate him, then why isn't every out that somebody makes an example of why
because
we should dislike
you
them?
You know this, Chris. It's all circumstance. The two-hitter around baseball is not hitting he doesn't have a 705 OPS. That just doesn't happen around baseball. It doesn't. And in fact, tomorrow on the Scraby Show, I did a deep dive on Arraez versus the rest of the second hitters in baseball. Now, I will say this. You don't have to just conform. Teams can have different lineups, and Arraez was working when he's hitting. When he was on that hot streak earlier this year, he moves the line. We've seen it happen. He's just not doing it consistently enough.
Cleveland Guardians, Brian Rocchio batted second today, OPS 622. I mean, I can find people here if you want me to. I know you can twist it to the narrative you want to give us too.
How many at-bats does that guy have?
He's a starter for the Guardians. He's been playing infield all year. They put him second today. All right, forget it. I'm going to lose this battle. And not only am I going to lose to you, I'm going to lose to everyone else out there.
I just don't think that you want to open your mind to anything else. You're stuck in this way, and that's fine if you want to be... If this is your opinion, this is your opinion.
Move him down in the order, fine. I don't care if they move him down in the order. I have no problem with it. But right now, I'm not managing the team, nor are you, nor is anyone listening.
No.
And evidently... The Padres seem to like him in the number two hole. And if you want to rail against that every time he makes an out for the rest of the season, that's on you. That's your own unhappiness. This team is doing fantastic. It's right there with a chance to win it. Guys underperform. Some guys overperform. Thus is baseball.
But you can at least meet me here, I think. When a guy has... almost a full season under his belt, and he's putting up the numbers that he's putting up this year, you have to be at least able to admit that this is the worst year of his career so far.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I guess.
The numbers are showing it is.
All right, fine. It's the worst year of his career.
He's a conundrum, too, because he has tons of doubles, but he has a low OPS.
Would you like me to find a slugging player somewhere in baseball that's having the worst year of their career, yet still bats cleanup for their team because that's the track record they have? Would you like me to try to find one? Because I will.
But if it,
there's another player somewhere who's having, quote, the worst year of their career, but they build up enough cachet to continue batting and contributing the way they do. Evidently, this isn't me because I don't make the lineup. But evidently, his three straight batting titles carry some weight with the people who make the Padre lineup.
Well, they shouldn't.
Okay, well,
I'm just kidding. I'm not qualified to say that.
You're saying that dead straight up.
No, I'm not qualified to say that. Sure. I was trying to make light of the situation. Wow. I don't... I like Luis Urias. He's important for this team. I think that he's played a really good first base this year for a guy who never played first base. I just don't want to see it in the playoffs where a big spot in the order or a big part in the game's coming up, and Luis Urias is in the two hole right now. Like, if he gets on fire, all we want for him is to hit. That's it. That's all we want.
I honestly want every guy to get a hit every time up.
Me too.
Okay.
That would be amazing.
I'm honestly not giving up on Manny after 0 for 4, 2 strikeouts, and waving through pitch after pitch today. Guys have bad games. Guys have bad weeks. Manny went 14 games without an RBI. Should have been dropped out of the three hole, according to all of the people who hate Luis Urias.
That's not true.
No, because Manny has his track record that he's going to...
But he's done it this year. Luis has not done it this year.
Yeah.
He hasn't. I don't know why you're arguing with me on this, because he hasn't.
All right, he's got more RBIs this year than he's ever had in his career.
Okay.
All right, he's got more walks this year than last year. I'm losing, and I don't mind losing, because this was the same thing that you joined me in doing when everyone was tearing apart Xander Bogaerts.
Well, no, I backed him up. I said cheer for him.
Yes, you did.
And I just said cheer for Luis Urias, too. It doesn't change. Doesn't change. If Luis Urias is in the lineup, I'm going to hope for him to do something great. But I'm not seeing it right now.
Thank goodness he wasn't up today, because
he was.
We had the guy up that we wanted, Ramon Laureano. Doesn't guarantee success. Thus is the game of baseball. I will probably get another 50 tweets now from people who say I'm an idiot. And I don't get it, because I'm just supporting a guy who's won three straight batting titles, and I don't make the lineup. Send it elsewhere. I don't decide this. They do, and they obviously think he should bat second. So stop telling me I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know anything about baseball because Arise bats second.
First off,
that is not my choice.
You got to get off Twitter. You got to get off Twitter. I think what most people are saying is you're not at least open to thinking about the fact that he's not having a great year for his standards.
I couldn't argue that. He has not been the same threat. But evidently, judging by the lineup every day, he's built up enough cachet in the minds of the Padre brass. They think that he is going to get the job done. And
I think
he very well could hit 450 in September. If anyone could do it, it would be him.
Let's do it.
And that's what they're banking on. The same way that when Manny can't get a hit for a month, they bank on him. The same way when Fernando goes over a month without a home run, you still stick him up there because you know he's going to get the swing back. And guess what? This week, a week in Seattle, he was hitting balls over the fence, up against the fence, bouncing off the fence. Fernando looked a lot more like Fernando. Thus is the course of a season. Darvish was lousy again today. So, I guess what? We can't use Darvish? No, he has a track record of being good. Cease still hasn't won a game on the road. But
he's
still going to go with him.
No, he's a problem.
He's not.
I
he's going to pitch the rest of the season.
Is.
We're going to take him out?
No, but
it's how baseball works.
But, like, last night, I really, really want for Dylan Cease to be great, because he's an awesome dude. It's fun when he pitches well. But it is, you could, we all felt it happening last night when he was given up. Who was the first three-run shot that he gave up? Was it a Rosarena?
A Rosarena.
And then the next three-run shot, I don't even think he was still in the game.
No,
but it was
Jason
Suarez.
Adam gave it, it,
oh, that's
gave
right,
it
that's
up.
Right,
and,
that's right.
That was the dumbest thing Mike Schilt has ever
say
done
this?
As well.
Can we also say this? The Mariners are a really good team.
Doesn't
and they
matter.
Are dangerous.
Doesn't matter.
That 1-5 is maybe the most powerful 1-5 in baseball.
According to the people who follow the Padres, no team has beaten the Padres this year. Every game has been lost because of a stupid decision by Mike Schilt.
There are some
or underperformance by players.
Well, that's just the reality of being a professional or being a manager and being a professional baseball player. We're all going to criticize even though we don't have the authority to do so. Here's something from the chat that I think there are people defending you, Chris. SD Mike says something I think is very true. I think Chris probably gets some crazy DMs from the extremists. Most people want him to bat later in the order, but they still love Arise, which I think is the message I'm trying to deliver.
All right. I found it absolutely hilarious that he, or the number two spot, came up at the end of the game.
I do too.
And if you want me to give you another irony, I'll give you one.
Okay.
Padres told us today that Ryan O'Hearn will probably be our Friar Friday guest this week.
I was loving this. I was loving this.
So there you go. Another guy that I supposedly hate and root against and think is terrible, even though I never said that.
And I have backed you up on this from the beginning. Chris does not hate Ryan O'Hearn. He was trying to explain the reasoning behind why he wasn't going to face Robbie Ray.
And then
we went a little crazy.
No, then he homered against Robbie Ray. And so I was an idiot again.
It was kind of funny.
I'm honestly thinking in my mind, and I know what you're going to probably say, but I'm thinking in my mind of how I was going to tell Ryan O'Hearn that story. But I don't know that I want to go there because he may take it the wrong way.
We'll think about it.
No one was crim. We were just looking at the numbers, which seemed to indicate that he was less of a threat against lefties.
And that was
and
true.
Then he homered and the floodgates opened.
Yeah, he didn't help you with his home run.
Goodness gracious.
goodness
it has
gracious.
Been a couple of crazy weeks. Final score, Seattle 4, Padres 3. Series belongs to the Mariners. I guess if you want, we can also...
It's also very annoying that the Mariners just handled the Padres all year.
They did. They won five out of six.
The Padres were 1-5.
Yeah, they won five of the six games. While we're at it, Scraby,
what's up?
Can we complain about AJ Preller too?
What did he do?
Well, he sent both Andrés Muñoz and Matt Brash to the Seattle Mariners in trades at the beginning of this
decade. I like Robert Suarez and Mason Miller and Jason Adam. And Morihone, I like those guys, too.
But those were our very own guys that were setting us down at the end of the game.
You know, last time I checked, Robert Suarez was either tied or is the save leader in baseball.
Guarantee you there's some people that are angry
with
AJ
Preller.
There
are, but those are the extremists. I like that word now. Those are the Padres extremists.
All right. Padre fans with some sense and those without some sense. We will be back, and I will try to make some more sense, or make sense for the first time, depending how you look at it. Notes on a scorecard from today's loss. When we come back, Gwynn and Chris, Scraby, special show till 7, 97.3 The Fan.
Wish me luck.
The Seattle Mariners closed out the game today, and I think the game, the first game of the series, using the combination of Matt Brash and Andrés Muñoz. I looked at the players that the Padres received in return from Seattle on those two deals. We got Austin Adams. We got Dan Altavilla. We got Austin Nola. And in the Matt Brash trade, we got some guy named Taylor Williams.
So none of them are...
Easy come, easy go.
The Munoz guys, there's none on the team anymore.
Munoz is like one of the best closers in baseball, of course, and Brash is pretty tough to hit. I don't know if Ask Ramon Laureano. Man, that guy throws a slider that goes from here to there.
Yeah, Brian Wu. Can we give the Padres hitting a little bit of credit because they chased Brian Wu before six innings for the first time of the year?
Funny you mentioned that. It leads us into today's rendition of Notes on a Scorecard, which we will do after we check a little coming home traffic for you.
From the 855 Get Ross Traffic Center, protecting San Diego after accidents or injury, here's Kelly Danik.
Still seeing plenty of activity on our roads this afternoon. Hit and run crash southbound 5 right before Sassafras. It's over to the right shoulder. Up ahead in the downtown area, just before Civic Center, collision has been cleared over to the right shoulder. And northbound 5 before Claremont Drive, accident blocking the two right lanes. Eastbound 905 near Siempre Viva, we have reports.
What did Chris like? What does Chris want to clean up? Observations written on a grocery list. Notes on a Scorecard starts now.
All right, notes on a scorecard from today's ballgame in Seattle. Already mentioned a couple of these, but first thing I wrote down... Padres have only won one series on the road this year against a winning team.
That is crazy.
And a win today would have made it two.
That is crazy.
But it did not happen. I did look up to see how many the Dodgers have won, and they've only won three.
Oh.
One of them was here against the Padres earlier this season, but it's not like a lot of teams win a lot of series against good teams on the road.
See, I can feel better when I get perspective.
There's a little perspective. And look, the Padres are having a great season despite that one statistic because they're mopping up on the bad teams. And frankly, this weekend, they'll have a bad team because Minnesota has been pretty much out of it since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And headed in the wrong direction. Second thing I wrote down before the first pitch, Brian Wu. Incredible streak as far as in this day and age of baseball.
Yeah, seriously.
To go all 25 starts this year and never get taken out before the end of the sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
Not once all year.
And never walked more than two guys.
And I thought, well, the Padres can get him out before the sixth inning. That would be good. Well, they got him out. They broke his streak.
They did.
So that's something they can take on the plane with them to Minnesota. But it doesn't feel all that great.
No, and I did love because I put it up before the game. Do the Padres break the six-inning streak for Brian Wu?
They did.
And as the game went along, I got more comments about, no, no, no. And then they did, and it made me so happy.
Well, look, the Padres did what they do, you know, even while they weren't scoring runs. And that's to foul a lot of pitches off, get guys on base, have chances to score. You know, they went 3-for-10, runners in scoring position. That's a lot of opportunities in a game against a pitcher like this. You know?
Yeah,
but
it totally is.
They had guys on base. He hit a batter. He gave up a walk. I thought they did all right. They didn't get a lot of hard contact off him, though, I will say.
No.
He throws strikes, and the ball is moving around in the strike zone.
He broke Iglesias' bat twice in the same at-bat.
He broke one of Xander's bats all the way down to the nub.
Ugh.
Yeah.
We'll and talk Xander about. Took a tough foul ball off of his ankle.
Were you doing
again.
Notes on a scorecard?
Sorry.
Ramon Laureano hit number two, and I've obviously made a note of that. All right, first real note of the game today. Yu Darvish starting for the Padres. And for Darvish, it's been one good, one not so good. One good, one not so good. I was hoping, you know, he could come back with another good. And really, he only made one bad pitch today, but it was enough to beat him. I would say this, in the bottom of the first inning, Cal Raleigh came up with nobody on, no or one out, no, you know, clear behind him.
Yes.
And Darvish fell behind 3-1. And I said to myself, well, he's not going to give him anything to hit. It's Cal Raleigh. You got to either walk him or nibble on the corner here and go after the next guy. That's what Darvish would do. He's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Darvish threw one right down the middle, and Raleigh just was out in front of it and flied out the right field.
You think it was a mistake or he
I think it was.
Tried to sneak one past the rat?
Yeah, I don't think he tried to sneak one past that guy because not many have snuck one past Raleigh
today.
No, that's
very true.
Next batter, though, was Julio Rodriguez. Darvish got to two strikes with that lollipop curveball that takes forever to get there. And he never throws it two pitches in a row, except he did. And poor Rodriguez had no shot and dribbled the ball out in front of the mound. That's Darvish at his finest. Love it. Bogarts got a base hit because his bat got sawed off. I don't know if you saw that play. The bat went directly at Eugenio Suarez, who had to circle around the bat.
He did.
To pick up the ball. That was the way that, you know, Bogarts got aboard. And, Frank, like I said, the Padres had six hits today. A lot of them were kind of like that against Wu.
They were very bloopy.
Yeah, he doesn't give up a lot of hard contact. The stolen base that Bogarts had, where he did the swim move and moved his hand out of the way.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. I felt like J.P. Crawford, the shortstop there, lost his laundry. Like, he was standing there naked. He must have felt so bad, because he just reached down for the easiest tag of his life, and Xander went, whoop, whoop, whoop.
I love it.
That was so good.
The extra effort, I love.
So good by Xander Bogarts. And, you know, I already talked about it in the first segment, so I'm not going to do it again. But Xander Bogarts now can basically do no wrong. And so maybe there is hope, you know, in the way back of my mind, that eventually Luis Arraez will be loved by the faithful again. Because if Xander could turn it around, maybe Luis Arraez can as well. Bottom of the second inning, Eugenio Suarez gets a rare single. I don't know how many singles this guy hits. He's got 42 home runs. He's only batting 230, so he doesn't get too many singles.
Yeah.
But a mistake here by Darvish. A rare mistake by Darvish. Didn't pay any attention to him at all, and Suarez swiped second easily.
Yep.
We know that Fermin's going to throw him out 90% of the time. But Darvish can't make those mistakes, and it cost him because the next guy, Rayleigh, you know, hit one into the gap there, knocked in the first run of the game. Can't do that.
No.
Darvish is too smart for that. You got to hold Suarez. You can't let this guy steal a bag on you there.
Yeah, he's not a bag stealer.
So, you know, and then, let's see, was it the fourth inning? Yeah, fourth inning, Rodriguez got on. And again, I don't think Darvish paid any attention to him. Fermin desperately trying to throw him out on that one, and he sailed it into center field. I don't blame Fermin. I blame Darvish for making Fermin have to rush that throw so much. And now Rodriguez is on third with nobody out. He's scoring.
Yeah.
Well, turned out three scored, because after a walk, Suarez hit the three-run homer. So 4-0. Here's the thing with Suarez now playing with Cal Raleigh. I don't know if people realize just how dangerous the Mariners right now are. It's possible that Suarez will end up with 50 home runs this year. He's got 42. Raleigh's already got 50. In the history of baseball, only one pair of teammates has ever hit 50 home runs for the same team in 1 year. And it was Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle in 1961 for the Yankees. That's it. Now, I grant you, Suarez isn't hitting all of his home runs for Seattle, but they could have 250 home run guys by the end of the season. That's only happened once before.
Yeah.
So it's pretty rare.
I just wanted
to point it out.
I mean, that is really rare. When it's only happened once, I mean, it's pretty rare.
Yeah, that was the year that Maris broke the record with 61. Mantle, actually, that year was leading most of the season, got hurt, and finished with 54.
I always forget that detail.
Right. Most people thought Mantle was going to break Ruth's record. And then when he got hurt, it went to Maris. And
everybody hated Roger Maris for it.
They hated him, even though he had all the Yankee fans were rooting against him.
They couldn't break the Babe's record?
Yeah, it was Babe Ruth's record. He wasn't supposed to do that. And the classic shots of Roger Maris with his hair falling out. He was under so much stress.
I
know. Guy was under so much stress, and he ended up breaking the record on the final day.
So baseball fans in like 1960 are the same as baseball fans in 2025.
Yeah, if they would have had a talk show in 1961, they would have said, Maris sucks. He's going to break the Babe's record. I hate that guy. All right, so now it's 4-0. You got a long way to go. But, you know, I don't feel ever the Padres... This club's out of it. They've been fighting back all year, and they did today. Before they fought back, how about Gavin Sheets going back to left field, reaching up against the fence, juggling the ball, and making the catch? I can't say enough good things about Gavin Sheets. He ran through a fence earlier this year, practically broke the fence at Petco Park. Now he's out there looking like Roberto Clemente.
He really is
dancing around.
He has improved so much. And it's
so
noticeable.
So many areas.
Like his hitting right now. He's hitting well right now. He's hitting off of lefties right now.
Well, he got the hit in the fifth inning that started a rally that kind of petered out. Then he came up again in the sixth after O'Hearn got the hit again, fighting off a tough pitch, you know, getting it into left center, and then with two on. And two out, Sheets got the RBI. Made it 4-1, gave you a little hope there. Iglesias, the infield single. Again, these are the kind of hits you get off Brian. Yeah. But that knocked him out
and
broke his streak of 25 in a row. Up came Jake, and Jake, against a lefty, got the bases loaded, hit batter. Now you are one hit away from tying the game. And here's how that rally went, by the way, Scraby. Hit by pitch, soft single, rolling ground ball single, infield single that went about 10 feet, and hit by pitch. That's how you scored two runs. That's, to me, is resourceful.
That is resourceful. You're creating runs there.
You are. And unfortunately, Fermin struck out at the end. Good pitch by Spire down in the zone. And as I said earlier, Fermin, you know, forever can't be trusted in these situations. I'm joking. In the bottom of the sixth inning, Padres got a big break. The Padres' bullpen, by the way, four shutout innings today.
Yeah.
But they were not smooth about it. Especially David Morgan, who came in, he looked like he was bringing with him the five runs he gave up the other night. And that's tough for a young pitcher to leave that in the past. He threw 15 pitches today, only five strikes.
Yep.
So, you know, you got to get David Morgan back. He's been a really, you know, big part of what's happened this year.
He needs to pitch in more pressure spots.
Well, he gave
up
five the other night. They may not let him do it again. But if that's the case, then when he does pitch, he's got to be, you know, confident again. And it's hard to do when you've given up five runs in your previous outing. But anyway, the Mariners would have scored except for the one of your favorite plays, the shot by Polanco bounced over the fence for a ground rule double. That would have easily scored that run. You don't like that rule.
I said it in the back. I said, even when it goes against me, I hate that rule.
Yeah, you don't like that rule.
Well, we're not there yet. Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
But, I was going to say we're not there yet in the game.
No, that was that would have made it 5-2, and, you know, who knows. Eighth inning, Xander fouls a ball off his foot for about the umpteenth time.
Mm.
He does not wear one of those guards there.
He should.
He might want to get one. Because it's happened
painful
to him like 15 times now in the last, not 15, but you know what I mean.
I can't even imagine what it's like to get a foul ball into your ankle, let alone like four times in a week.
No good. Bottom of the eighth inning. Again, Mariners have a man on first, two out. The base runner starts to steal second. Crawford, hard ground ball down the first baseline. But who knocked it down? The worst defensive fielding infielder in all of baseball.
Jake Cronenworth?
According to the analytics, Jake Cronenworth. I can't buy the whole ranking system that has Cronenworth so bad.
I'm with you
as a fielder.
I'm with you on that. He seems to get
out. If you don't
out
think he's a Gold Glove winner, fine. But I can't buy this. You know, the what is it? It's not a statistic.
Outs above average.
Outs above average. He is like a minus a lot.
Which I don't understand.
And I don't
get it.
Because every time there's a ball like that, he seems to knock it down and make the play.
He doesn't seem to make many errors.
So I don't know what they're looking at, but he saved a run there, kept it 4-2. And then, you know, the ninth inning, Arise came up and, you know, grounded out. Jake got the double.
Let me talk about that. How many close home runs have the Padres missed in the past, like, four games? They missed one on Sunday with Gavin Sheets against the Dodgers. They missed one right there.
That was just about a foot.
It was close.
But with all due respect, it didn't matter.
It didn't.
It would have helped Jake's stats.
But it wouldn't, yeah.
It wouldn't have mattered. They still needed another run somewhere along the line. And I did want to finish with Fernando. You know, we talked about it Monday a lot. Not only was he not hitting home runs, and it was been a month, but he wasn't hitting the ball with authority. In this series, he started to hit the ball with authority. And I am hoping that the old Fernando, although we keep good parts of the new Fernando. I hope the old Fernando starts to come back. He hit home run to center field. He hit a double off the right center field fence. He flied out deep to the warning track today. I hadn't even seen one of those in a month. He seems to be starting to hit with more authority. That can only be a good thing.
That's a huge thing. And like you said, keep the good eye Fernando and then join up the power Fernando.
Well, keep the good eye and punish the mistakes. That's the whole key to it. And if you're wondering why we're not going to talk about Laureano making the last out, it's because it's we talked about it for the first 25 minutes of the show and we were screaming at each other.
I was just trying to help you.
There we go. Mariners 4, Padres 3. Those are my notes on the scorecard. We have a bonus hour of Gwen and Chris. I know a lot of people are getting for their fantasy football draft. We've got the latest stuff there. A couple of important baseball transactions as well today to share with you. So stick around. We're coming back. We got a little bonus action here. Gwen and Chris, post-game show. If you're just tuned in, Mariners over the Padres today, 4-3. Happy hour brought to you by GL Pools. They are the swimming pool experts. They are trusted by thousands of San Diegans since 2006. Baseball season's in full swing. So is swim season. So call GL Pools, mention the word radio. You get a free month of pool service. Padres fall a game and a half behind the Dodgers, the Doyers. Dodgers home to the Reds. Shohei on the mound tonight. No score. They're in the top of the second inning in Los Angeles.
Last time he pitched against the Reds, he left the game with a cramp.
Oh, goodness. And we thought his season and career were over.
Well, remember they were that? Acting like it.
They were kind of acting
like it.
They're
like, oh, gosh.
It's over. One other quick Dodger note. Freddie Freeman not in the game tonight. The proverbial stiff neck for Freddie. A neck issue, they're actually calling it. Brewers, all-star closer. Is it Tyler McGill? They have a lot of McGills out there.
Trevor
McGill, 15-day injured list. So he goes on the IL. Of course, I just traded for him in my fantasy league. It's incredible the ability I have to just immediately put somebody on the injury list.
You need to get out of your
fantasy league.
I'm
so lucky. So unlucky. All right. What did I want to get to here?
The interview.
Yes, I do. Earlier today, Tony Gwynn Jr., who is traveling with the Padres right now, that's why we're not speaking with him, he was offered to do a national television interview through Zoom.
Yeah.
Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah.
National exposure for our guy, Tony Gwynn Jr. Not the first time. He's a very popular guy out there in the world of baseball. You may know that.
It's still fun, though, when I see Tony
on TV. I do. I think it's fun to see him on the big screen out there and doing a national interview. Yeah.
I know that guy.
I know that guy, right? But it was the guy he was doing the interview with today that caused a little pause for both Scraby and myself. And we are going to have to ask Tony to explain when he comes on the show tomorrow. And I'm not going to hold it against him. He wanted to do the interview.
Yeah, of course.
So I just want to hear what he was thinking. The guy who asked him to do the interview was a guy that we love to hate on this show. ESPN's Brian Kenny.
Oh, MLB Network.
Oh, sorry. Right. Thank you. MLB Network's Brian. He worked at ESPN at one point, right?
Okay. I mean, the whole thing with Joe Musgrove cheating.
Just rings in my head.
Here are spin rates.
And he was so sure that Joe Musgrove got away with cheating, and never mentioning to anybody that he's like a lifelong Mets fan.
And also that Joe Musgrove, the numbers didn't line up. It was a picture being painted for one reason. It was to make the Padres look bad.
Yes. So we've never liked him for that. From what I could tell, Tony Gwynn Jr. was never a huge fan because Brian Kenny is a big analytics nerd. And the analytics have always said that Tony Gwynn Sr. was overrated. Won 8 batting titles, but didn't do much else. And I don't want to keep going here, but similar to the anti-Luis Arraez argument now, that even though Arraez has 3 straight batting titles, he's not that valuable. Well, Brian Kenny was the kind of guy who used to say Tony's dad wasn't that valuable.
That would be tough.
And I don't think Tony, you know, appreciated that too much.
No. I mean, yeah, that hurts.
I don't blame him. But anyway, he agreed to visit with Brian Kenny today. So I wanted to hear some of this.
I didn't watch it.
So I want to hear some of this interview. So tell me what happened, Scrape, or a little bit about
it. No, so they went into this interview. You can find it if you type in MLB Network Tony Gwynn Jr. It was the first thing that popped up for me.
Okay.
But they started talking about the trade deadline acquisitions. They also started, and Brian Kenny, I'll give him this. He made a good point that A.J. Preller, and you're going to hear him say this, but A.J. Preller has kept the Padres window open from year to year. And I'll let him explain
with
more.
With
his wheeling and dealing. And I think that's an important part of this. But here's the conversation between Tony and Brian Kenny.
By the way, before we hear this.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Before we hear this, at any point, does Tony just lose his cool and start to go off on this guy?
Of course he doesn't. No.
All right.
Okay. If all they did was get Mason Miller, you'd be like, all right, that's a big strike. But they get those three, right? They've got Nestor Cortez as well. That's like aggressive. It's like, everyone talks, oh, A.J. Preller this, A.J. Preller, but that's super aggressive work. And they've kept that window open. We thought 2 years ago the Soto year was the year. Then it was last year, should have been the year. They kept the window open.
They have. They've done a really terrific job of being able to draft guys, develop guys. And they're guys that other teams simply covet. And so you're able to be aggressive, as we've seen AJ really do over the past 3-4 consecutive years, and put his team in a position where they got to go out and play. They have the pieces. I think they have the length in the lineup. They have the depth in the bullpen to really make a deep run and really challenge for a World Series this year.
There's that part. You know what I noticed, Chris? Have you seen go to the screen? If you're not on YouTube, you can go to YouTube later and search 97.3 The Fan in YouTube, and you'll be able to see this. But Tony looks sharp, and we could barely get him to put on a regular T-shirt for the show.
He's
but
not
look
the MLB.
How sharp he
is. Here's another thing I notice. If you look at that shot of him right
the blur
now.
Behind him?
Yes. His room is blurred behind him, and he kind of jumps out into the frame.
Well, that's
when we have him on the stream, we can see his bed made behind him.
Yeah,
but now you can't even see that. How did he do that?
No, that's a setting you can do. It'll blur out the background so that no one can see anything.
Well, then we should see if we can get him to do it. I'm going to try to do that myself when I'm on the road this year.
Remember last year when you got your camera and it turned black and white? We couldn't figure out
how. I was black and white for half of a show.
It was the weirdest thing. On the camera, there was a setting that said black and white or color. I'm like, why would they have this?
Yeah, we didn't even know that until about halfway through the show.
Legend Girlie says, Tony, very serious. He is very serious.
Well, he's on the MLB Network. He's got to look alive there.
Yes.
All right. Do we have any other clips? Brian Wu working with our pal, Tony Gwynn Jr.
Brian Kenny, actually.
Oh, is Luis Arraez making too much contact? This ought to be fun.
Yes, let's hear about this.
Let's see where this goes.
I got to see.
You're trying to line it up.
You talk for a second, and I got to listen real quick.
I want to hear the Luis Arraez part.
Okay.
Okay. Looks like it's about there.
Okay, let's
go ahead
this,
and hit it and see what happens.
We're just going to start it in the middle of this.
Okay.
Now it gets interesting, and I'm thinking, oh, come on. But he battles at 0-2 like I've never seen anyone battle. But I have a question. Look at his strikeout percentage over the last 3 years. I mean, it's not just – he's just not just number one in the league. Like, he's cut it from 5.5 to 2.7. He's number one by a wide margin, but his production has gone down. So my question to you is, you know how we say a guy sells out for power knowing it's hurting his production? Is Arraez selling out for too much contact? As crazy as that sounds, is that possible?
I don't know that he's selling out for too much contact. I mean, that's just his style. I mean, it is embedded in his head to put the ball in play when it's all said and done. Obviously, getting to 0-2 counts isn't ideal for anybody, but if you're going to be there, that doesn't mean that bat needs to end. And so it becomes a battle of attrition if you can continue to fight pitches off and hopefully get your swing in a position where you can put a good swing on it. Now, this year, he hasn't had the type of success he's had, you know, in terms of offensively as he's had in the past. But there's a bigger picture of why he's in the spot that he's in and the job he's done. You know, when you're able to go 0-2 and see 7-8 pitches, those are pitches that wear on a pitcher over time. And as I said, it's a kind of a part of a bigger picture that the lineup is trying to accomplish as they try to, you know, get through a starter and get into that bullpen.
Interesting point by Tony there.
What part?
Well, the part that Tony says that maybe the reason Arise bats second doesn't have everything to do with his batting average or everything to do with anything other than the fact that he sees so many pitches. That's why they want him there, that it's a bigger part of a picture. Maybe Tony's trying to explain what the staff is thinking by batting Arise second. Because remember, in this whole argument that we keep having, I keep reminding everybody, I don't put Arise second in the order. They do.
They do.
So
yes.
What Tony's addressing is maybe this is one of the unseen reasons why they just like him getting a lot of pitches. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
No, that's
here.
Fine. That's fine. You're spitballing here. The whole thing with the amount of strikeouts going down each year.
Yeah.
Like,
and
I know there's
success
three, there's,
is going down.
And the success is going down. There's three true outcomes, right? Walk, hit.
No,
strikeout.
Walk, strikeout, home run. The true outcomes.
Okay, so the strikeout, I don't know if it's it's crazy for me to say this, but I don't know that it benefits him to strike out less, if that makes any sense.
He may be making more soft contact this year, trying to avoid striking out. I can actually make that connection.
Okay.
Where you're just trying to get a bat on the ball so that you don't strike out. But you're just rolling at the shortstop or popping at the left field, which is not doing anything good.
It's an empty out.
Right, it's an empty out. Whereas if you were taking a little more of an aggressive cut, you might strike out. But if you hit it, you'd stand more of a chance of the ball falling in.
Yeah,
I can actually buy that. I can only buy that, though, because you and I arrived at that, not because Brian Kenny asked about it.
That's fine with me. As long as we're arriving somewhere in the middle for the first time this week.
I can't give Brian Kenny any credit, but I give Tony some credit. Tony Gwynn Jr., and hey, people ask. I don't know if they ask you. I think they do.
What?
I get asked, is Tony Gwynn Jr. really nice?
Yeah.
I just get straight up asked that. And my answer
is he really nice? Like
is he just
really
a nice,
nice
guy?
Yeah.
Or is he a good guy?
Yeah.
And my answer every time is, yeah, you wouldn't believe how nice he is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible how nice he is. He's way nicer than you or I. I mean, not even close there.
I know. Whenever he comes in here, I feel like I'm misbehaving or something because
right.
He's such an angel.
Yeah, you and I are nowhere near as nice as him. And if Brian Kenny asked me, I would tell him, you know, which way is up.
I would prefer you not, just in case there's something down the road where we need Brian Kenny.
But you can easily say no.
Yeah, you could say no. But that was a good opportunity for Tony, so he should have taken it, and he did.
He took it, and he'll discuss more about that, I'm sure, with us when he's joins us tomorrow. We have a bonus hour of Gwynn and Chris. When we return, a couple of, what do you have, anything that you're dying for, Scrape? I was going to give some NFL updates. You know, people are getting ready. Our draft is tomorrow night, and I know everybody's having their draft, so there's some interesting notes to pass along, but go ahead, what you got?
This hour, 97.3 The Fan, is brought to you by Staples. Your local Staples is hot deals and super low prices throughout the store on everything for your business. And right now at Staples, save up to $125 off your print order. Exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for details. Ends 9/13, and save even more with the Easy Rewards program at Staples. Hopefully a part of your NFL update is going to include one Chiefs wide receiver.
It will.
Okay.
And that's a person that a lot of people want to know about, because I would think he's on
it
a lot of people's
impact.
Draft
yeah.
boards.
Yes,
Ohtani has struck out 5 through 2 innings. No score. Dodgers, Reds will keep you up to date. Gwynn and Chris back with more after a check of... No? People are home already, you say?
I guess so.
Okay. Well, if you're not home, sorry, we're not giving any traffic to help you get
let
home.
Let me say, it looks pretty good on the 15 south and north.
Scraby says it's good. Chris Hello and Scraby, extra hour together here on the post game. Gwynn and Chris program. Our buddy and Brian Kinney's best friend, Tony Gwynn Jr., is on a flight to Minneapolis with the Padres. Start the series Friday there in Minnesota.
I'm going to try to track it right now.
You're going to see where the plane is? You're weird.
I love it.
You are so weird that you track this, and I don't think you should do it on the radio.
I'm not saying, like...
You're not... Don't
I'm not
tell
giving
everybody
information
where they are.
About it. I'm just saying...
I don't want you telling the whole listening audience where the Padre plane is right now.
Why?
I don't
because
think
they're going to go and fly to Minnesota and congratulate them when they get off the plane?
No, something worse, and I don't even want to tell you what that could
that
be in this
day and age.
That
is a crazy thought of yours.
In this day and age...
That is a crazy thought.
I don't put anything past anybody, unfortunately.
I don't either, but...
All right, a couple of NFL notes. This will get you ready for your fantasy football draft or get you up to speed. Chiefs wide receiver Rashi Rice, 6-game suspension to start the season. So he will start playing, though, in Week 7. So there you go.
I think this is a good...
It sounds fair.
Yeah.
We've given him... I don't know. I haven't heard him really say a lot about this whole thing. Expressing regret, things like that. I don't really remember hearing a lot of that.
I did.
I'm assuming in Kansas City he's, faced the media and talked to people and, hopefully learned his lesson, from... And if you forgot what it was, he drove like 130 miles an hour and there was a huge crash.
People left the scene of an accident. No one died.
Oh, no one died in that one. I'm sorry. I get them mixed up. Several of these ones... People have died.
That is true.
True. All right. So Rashi Rice, 6-game suspension. Chiefs wide receivers you can choose from before he comes back. Xavier Worthy. Is he ready to step up? Maybe. He looked pretty good near the end of the season. I don't know. Hollywood Brown was hurt all year. Juju Smith-Schuster is still there.
Oh, my goodness.
No. Or you can always get Travis Kelce. My wife did a did her mock draft last night.
Please don't tell me she drafted Travis Kelce.
She wanted to, like in the second round, and I
in the second.
I was like, well, you can do that if you're going to take Taylor Swift.
The
in
guy's
the third.
Already,
but I mean, yeah, Travis Kelce's not a second rounder anymore.
The guy's already got 1 foot in retirement.
I wouldn't take him that early. No, there's other tight ends now. Adam Thielen. It's a story.
Hooked
returns
on
returns to the Vikings. Traded by the Panthers. Evidently, the Panthers just have loads and loads of great players that I don't know about. Because Adam Thielen, I think, is a legit wide receiver.
He was.
And Minnesota needs him because Jordan Addison's injured, out for the first several weeks. He has a 3-game suspension. Sorry.
Yes.
He's suspended. A couple of other guys are hurt. Rondale Moore, season-ending knee injury. Number 3 receiver, Jalen Naylor, hurt. Thielen probably going to walk right in and start opposite JJ for the Vikings. Again, fine, but who are the Panthers making way for? Xavier Leggett? I don't even know who the Panthers have. Like, I don't understand a lot of teams, but it's like the Vikings called and said, we really need a starting wide receiver, and the Panthers said, well, we're terrible. We'll give you ours.
It was more of a, hey, go compete up there because we're not going to compete. You're at the end of your career type of thing.
I hope that the Panthers aren't already giving up this season. I just try. Well, they did draft. Okay, the Panthers drafted that McMillan from Arizona.
Which I am really surprised by.
Ted Roy and McMillan and Xavier Leggett. Jalen Coker. I don't think anybody's going to be in a rush to draft any of those guys.
No.
But anyway, that's the that note on Adam Thielen. There's one more NFL note I wanted to give you. I guess we're good. Well, the 49ers said they're not going to trade your guy, Jennings.
Yes.
Jawan Jennings.
Please don't.
49ers wide receiver room, Jawan Jennings, Ricky Pearsall. First-round pick last year.
Yes.
And he had some moments, actually, last year.
He did. I'm eyeing him in the draft if it comes up.
All right. And Sky Moore picked him up from the Chiefs. Look out.
They have an issue, and maybe they shouldn't have traded Debo because...
I don't know what Debo is going to do in D.C., but I would... Let's put it this way. If I had my choice of Debo or Sky Moore and it was my pick... Probably going to take Debo.
I'm probably going to take Debo, too.
Yeah. See what Debo has left.
If Sky Moore can't find a way to get...
If he can't get open with Patrick Mahomes, he's not going to get open with Brock Purdy.
But Juwan Jennings, I dove deep into the training camp controversy in the 49ers. But
he wanted to get traded, right? And Ayuk wanted more money.
He wanted a new contract or get traded. Last year, Ayuk wanted money. They gave him money. He got hurt. He's not back until like week 6 or 7. But the controversy is that Juwan Jennings, the 49ers say that he's been out with a calf injury all preseason. But a lot of people think it's a contract thing.
Okay. One thing I want to say about your 49ers, and then once the season starts, I'm not going to say anything good again.
Okay.
But I'm going to say a good thing right now. The 49ers, to me, are smart. And I think they're smarter than a lot of teams. They do not collect, other than trading for McCaffrey, which was a big deal.
It was.
But other than that, they do not collect shiny objects. They put guys at wide receiver, they play them for a couple years, they move on, they bring a couple more in. Even their quarterback is a lunch pail, sixth pick, right? They spend most of their money on defensive guys who can dominate the game.
And they also go through defensive linemen. Guys a lot. They go through defensive guys a lot. They trade them after
the 49ers want a great offensive line and a defense that can beat you up. And you know what? It put them in 2 Super Bowls and 2 NFC Championship games. I'd say that's pretty good. I know they didn't win any, and I'm going to start criticizing them again next week. But for now, I would take that with my team. And my team is the opposite of your team, because my team doesn't care about an offensive line, doesn't get anybody who can tackle anybody on defense, but is more than willing to get as many Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddles as they can possibly handle.
It doesn't always work that way. I think, and I'm not trying to pump up the 49ers, but I think that's the way you have to do it in the NFL.
I think so.
Use the rookie contract scale to get as much as you can and then let them go off in free agency and bring new rookies in.
Let the wide receiver room keep changing hands.
Yeah.
But build an awesome offensive line. Build a front seven. Get some cornerbacks who can actually stick to somebody.
I think it's actually, you were
talking
about,
I think it's worked for the 49ers. They've been one of the more successful clubs. And they've been successful because of the team concept, more even, I think, than the Chiefs, who've been successful because Patrick Mahomes saves their bacon, you know.
He does.
4 times a year. Or 5.
He does. The contracts that the 49ers have given out, though, are going to bite them. Brandon Ayuk is going to bite them.
Yep, that's because they're doing something they don't normally do.
Yeah, they went outside the norm. Who else is going to bite them? Oh, I think Trent Williams, he's getting old.
Well, yeah, but they had to give him because he just did so much for them. He was the best offensive lineman in the league for at least a couple of years there. I would rather be the 49ers, and John Lynch, I think, does it right. And I'm not saying that. Again, like I said, next week I'll deny having ever said that.
You were saying it was malpractice with Gavin Sheets in the outfield earlier this season. It's malpractice that the Dolphins have not given Tua a line.
No kidding. All
of the head injuries that Tua's had.
And he keeps coming back and dedicating himself to this franchise.
Which shows you about him.
Right, and they keep leaving him unprotected back there.
I agree.
I'm really, really down on what Miami is doing. All right, quick other couple of NFL needs, news and notes. What are you going to do with Travis Hunter in the fantasy football draft?
Someone else pick him.
Let someone else have him.
He says he's
100%. He's going to be ready to go, opening game, both sides of the ball, rolling at full speed.
Good luck.
Jaguars still haven't really said what they're going to do with him yet.
If I was listening to a fantasy football podcast, and there was a common question amongst the ESPN leagues, which is, if Travis Hunter gets an interception, does he get points for the interception? And the answer is no.
Even if he pick six?
He doesn't get anything for that. Like, it's like in baseball. Shohei Ohtani's a hitter, and Shohei Ohtani's a pitcher.
I just think the Jaguars have a great wide receiver right now in Thomas, right? Brian Thomas Jr.
He
might be a top 10 overall pick.
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't think Hunter, even though he's going to get all of the acclaim and attention, I don't think he's really the guy. Patriots signed Tommy DeVito.
Oh, Tommy Cutlets. Now I'm Tommy Clamchowder.
He's backing up Drake May now for the Pats. Giants let him go. Thanks, because they're going with Russell Wilson, Jackson Dart, and Jameis Winston. Giants. I saw the Dolphins picked up your old running back that was their old running back.
Jeff Wilson.
That went back to being your old running back. Yeah, Jeff Wilson. McLaurin returned to the field today. All systems go for him. Najee Harris, who the Chargers brought back, practiced in pads today. He's ready to go. He looked explosive, according to the reporting here of Chris Rim. And I don't think he was wearing a yellow jersey. What did that mean? He's leading the Tour de France?
I don't know. That's interesting. No, that means it's worn, no contact or
yes,
something?
Yes, it's worn by a player who's working their way through injury still.
He's not injured, though. He just didn't practice.
He hadn't practiced yet. Anything else on the NFL that I missed?
No, I think you covered everything.
Pretty much everything. I think everybody should be ready to go. Good luck in your fantasy draft. If it's tomorrow, when ours is tomorrow night, or
I got the
sometime this
pick.
Weekend. You're picking after me. Thomas is first, even though he won the championship. I don't quite know how that worked
I don't
out,
know how
but
it
did.
Either.
Has he said he's going to take Ja'Marr Chase?
No, he's doing
he trying
his typical
to be
Thomas
secret,
thing where he
trying to be secret.
Thomas
about
is
it.
The guy in our group or in our fantasy league that does not put a lineup in until Sunday morning, so you
and
can't see it.
And we all hate that.
Yeah, and so he's also the guy who's telling me he's going to draft like Derrick Henry first overall, which I know is not going to happen.
Did you tell him what I to tell him, which is? If he's stupid enough to pass on Ja'Marr Chase,
you will.
I'll happily take him.
And if you're stupid right enough to pass on Ja'Marr Chase, I'll happily take him for like the fifth year in a row.
You have no chance of getting Ja'Marr Chase. He's not getting passed.
I'm going to try to convince you.
I will.
I'm going to try to make a trade.
Well,
I'll trade down to the two.
I think Thomas is going to end up with him.
Probably.
Because he's not. He did win the championship for
Thomas
a reason.
Thomas is not a dumb.
He's not a dummy.
Dumb fantasy football player.
I'm going to end up with Bijan Robinson because he's just. Too good, everybody thinks, is the number two pick. Although I'd love to take Christian McCaffrey and steal him from you. Because I have a feeling that's who you're going to take at the third pick.
I don't know.
Even though that's higher than he should go, you know you won't get him if you don't take him there.
And I think I might be okay with that because I'd rather not be doubly
worried about
angry
his injuries.
If he has a bad season.
Okay. Well, we'll see what you do. But I think you're going to have... Your choice of any player other than Ja'Marr Chase or Bijan Robinson.
Going Kyle Pitts, third overall.
You might be able to get him in the last round now. He's fallen pretty far.
Oh, that poor guy.
Yep. All right, Gwynn and Chris wraps up. We got a bunch of other stuff to get to. Some potpourri. I love that. And we'll keep you up to date on the Dodgers score. Gwynn and Chris back till 7. All right, 6:37, bonus hour, Gwynn and Chris. Tomorrow, don't forget, roundtable, 10 a.m. We'll all be there. An hour of commercial-free Padre talk. We'll no doubt be talking about the Mariners, who beat the Padres 4-3 today. Dodgers, Reds, Noelvi Marte. Thank you very much. Solo home run, his 11th off of Shohei. Bottom of the fourth inning, Reds 1. Dodgers nothing.
I was listening to something earlier about Shohei, and they were saying that it makes no sense for him to pitch and hit. He should just hit only.
They should never pitch.
I'm like, why?
I don't know.
Why should he not pitch?
He's got 4 innings, 8 strikeouts tonight.
He's a good pitcher, and they paid him to pitch.
He's wiping people off the map.
But this person's like, he's going to struggle. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that... If he does, they'll figure it out.
He really hasn't struggled a whole lot as a pitcher, but that's for them to worry about. All right, a couple of things in the potpourri segment. Number one, we got the Aztecs football. Starts tomorrow night. Stony Brook is in town.
New York.
From Long Island.
Long Island.
Stony Brook, San Diego State, tomorrow night at Snapdragon. What time is that? Game scrape
7, I believe 7:30.
That late?
I believe so.
They're playing late.
Let me just make sure because I looked at it thinking, it's 7 o'clock,
7 p.m. tomorrow night. Aztec opener. College football starts kind of full speed this weekend. I'll give you some of the top matchups, including Bill Belichick's debut.
I'm actually looking forward to this.
That game I'm actually going to watch. But before that, big news in the golf world today. Scrabe, clue us in. The Ryder Cup is one of your favorite things of the year.
I love it.
So tell me what happened with Keegan Bradley picking the squad.
Now, I think it's a little strange that because the captains are usually guys that are retired and they've been retired for a long time.
Is that a new thing now where they're bringing... current guys
in? Well, they had Tiger,
in?
And then they had... Yeah, yeah, it is kind of new. It is kind of new. I guess Jack Nicklaus isn't up for it anymore.
I was going to say, I mean, you're a captain. Are you not almost mostly just a figurehead? I mean, what does a captain do?
No, a captain does a lot.
What?
Sets all the ups, puts the teams together, and then on...
You got to tell me, you can't tell me that Keegan Bradley's making all of this up on his own.
Oh, he has the help
guys.
Of his team.
Right, okay. They're all sitting there going, hey, I want to match up here, I want to match up there.
Like, certain guys play well together, like,
yeah.
Because they have a bunch of different formats. They have best ball, they have four ball, they have singles.
And everybody
on
wants
Sunday.
To tell, but everyone's going to say, Scotty Scheffler will tell Bradley, hey, I feel most comfortable doing this. And Bradley will say, fine, that's what you're going to do.
Probably.
Right?
Probably. Okay. I mean, Scotty Scheffler can't really
tell anyone.
And if Scotty
Scheffler is on the 17th hole lining up a putt, Keegan Bradley's not going to wave off the TV crew, walk out on the green, and help line it up for him.
I don't think he can do that.
Okay.
But I think partners can.
So mostly, you're telling me the captain is a figurehead.
But there is more to it than that. There is more, because
all
you
right.
have to put the matchups together in a way like on, say, the best ball. You want a guy who can drive the ball really well, and you want a guy who has a good short game. So
let me ask you this.
What?
Don't you know that personally, you, Scraby, being a golf fan? So you could put the lineup together.
No, I couldn't. I'm not going to put myself in that position. But anyway, the big news
is
this.
So what was the big news? Keegan Bradley, did he pick himself or not?
That was what people were wondering, and he did not pick himself.
He didn't.
So he's been a Ryder Cup player for years and years and years. He famously, his caddy took the flag after he made this long putt to win a match and started like waving it around in the air. I love the Ryder Cup because it actually has some sort of, country pride.
It means a lot to these players. I know they love it. I don't know that United States citizens are hanging on every putt. You know, I don't feel like it's the same national pride to say, you know, the Winter Olympics hockey tournament, but it's something.
It's something that's been played for a very long time. It used to be crazy. Like, when in 1990...
Didn't they used to, like, boo the other team when it was
oh,
on?
Oh, they still do.
Oh,
they
still do.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so
yeah,
this year
do.
It's here...
It's in Bethpage,
okay, Black, so it's here.
In New York.
And every 2 years they have it, or every 4 years?
Every 2 years.
Every two. So in two more years, it'll be back in Britain.
It will be back in
but
Europe
this is
somewhere.
2 years.
Because last year, the last time they played, I believe it was in Rome, at a golf course in Rome. But
who won last time? Sorry, I don't know.
No,
they did?
I believe the Europeans did.
You don't
know. The Americans, well, I don't know what happened yesterday, Chris.
I know.
But what I think is kind of crazy about this whole thing is that, like, the golfers actually encourage people to cheer during their swings.
Right.
And
that's fun.
Yeah,
and
that
what's
is
fun
really
for,
fun.
I'll say one thing that's fun for this year's Ryder Cup, if you're a San Diegan, we got two Aztecs on the squad.
That is true.
You got J.J. Spahn and Xander Schauffele. That's pretty impressive, if you ask me. One thing I also like, DeChambeau's on the team, right? So you're bringing a couple of these yo-yos in from the live, you know, to play with the rest of the world. And the European team will be named Monday. Obviously, Scotty Scheffler's on the American team. And Morikawa, and, you know, all the guys you're pretty familiar with.
Oh, wow. So, in 2027, the Europeans are going to be hosting at Adair Manor, which is in the County Limerick in Ireland.
But you didn't tell me who won 2 years ago.
I know. I'm still looking for that.
Europeans routed the U.S. 16.5 to 11.5.
Yes, I remember that. I do.
So
that was pretty bad.
We got blasted last time.
Well, the Europeans, they have a better golfers right now.
They have some pretty good team players.
But
who do they have other than
Rory?
I know they got
and,
Rory.
Who
else they got?
Well, they did have Luke Donald for a while. They did have guys like...
Donald is the captain now. He's making his picks
No,
Monday.
But he... Yeah. Oh, I guess... Okay, you're asking for guys that are currently on the team.
Right.
Or
who else can be on the European team?
Let me just click 2023 and I'll tell you. It was McIlroy, Rahm, McIntyre... Yannick Paul, Adrian Maronk, Tommy Fleetwood, Rasmus Højgaard.
You named like three good guys.
Shane Lowry.
Yeah, he's good. So that's four. You gave me Lowry, Fleetwood, Rahm, and McIlroy. We shouldn't lose to that squad. Come on. Even you know that.
No, I'm with you. It All actually right. did anger me a few years ago when they lost. By
All right. Ryder Cup.
Around.
When is the Ryder Cup, by the way?
September.
Not till
it's
September.
Coming up. It's coming
okay.
up.
Okay. We mentioned college football gets
September
going.
September 25th is when it starts.
Thank you. College football gets going in earnest. Mentioned Aztecs, Stony Brook, 18.5 point favorites are the Aztecs, if you're wondering.
What? I can't take it. I have no idea what this team's going to look like.
Nobody knows. It's a college football season. Boise State opens tomorrow at South Florida. Some of the other games, Friday, Georgia Tech at Colorado. Always like to keep an eye on Dion. Saturday, there is one game that is pretty big. Number one, Texas plays at number three, Ohio State. And, of course, the number three team is favored, which seems to render the rankings kind of meaningless.
Totally does.
But here's what I want about that game, and I think you would too. It's Arch Manning, mm-hmm. who everyone is going to be looking at,
yep.
against our guy, Julian Sayin from Carlsbad High, who is the starter for Ohio State. I wouldn't it be, you know, what a great day. And this kid seemed really confident when we talked to him. I was very impressed with him. And he was still at Carlsbad, but he was very impressive.
He was committed to Alabama.
He's going to be going to Alabama. He ended up changing. He ended up at Ohio State. So he's not like anybody else or like everybody else. They all yeah. change teams. But he's very confident. And this could be a coming out party for him because everyone's going to be watching the game. If he wins it 35-31 over Arch Manning, you know, that's going to be a tremendous start to his career.
That is
so I'm looking
exciting.
Forward to that game.
That's yeah. exciting. Like,
good luck to Julian Sayin there.
Your debut in college football is against Texas and Arch Manning.
And if he wins, Scraby said he'll track him down on the show Monday.
I will. Well, I don't know about Monday.
You call him, you go, it's Scraby, your old pal.
And he'll be like, I'm sorry, who?
He will not.
I'm sorry, who?
Alabama opens at Florida State. I don't know if you remember, the Florida State like won one game last year. They became one of the worst teams in college football.
It's after the exodus of all the injuries when they went to the Orange Bowl a couple years ago.
Georgia opens with Cupcake of the Week, Marshall. Like, they shouldn't allow that. It's Georgia. Play somebody, Adam.
Now it's Adam's fault?
A little bit. USC plays Missouri State. That's another silly matchup. UCLA opens at home against Utah. And I don't know what's happened in the world, but Utah's favored
really?
On the road. And what then Monday night, I think, is the game of the week. Even though Ohio State, Texas is the marquee, I think the game everyone's going to really tune in is the one we're going to tune into, you and I, Monday. And that is TCU, the Braden Surprenants,
yes.
at North Carolina. Bill Belichick's debut as head coach of North Carolina.
Have the day off on Monday, too. So
yeah, that's right. It's Labor Day for almost all of us will be off. Here's the thing that I'm curious with the Belichick, and I think you are, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's considered one of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the best. And you can, you know, break it up in a bunch of ways. But to say that he knows a ton about football and coaching and techniques and everything, defense and offense and even play calling and winning and the mind game, you know, Belichick's pretty, you know, maybe you don't like him out there, but Belichick is, you know, how many books has he written that we all read because we want to learn from the greatest? The question now is, can that translate to a college kid? Because North Carolina, I don't know if they're going to have the same talent as TCU. I don't know exactly where all that stands. But can Belichick make the difference
yes.
in college football?
Yes, he can.
We'll see. We'll see. Right away? Like first game?
I think that he put together... He's not doing this to be embarrassed. He put together the team that is his best shot at winning. So,
they did announce their starting quarterback, North Carolina did today. It's a transfer quarterback from South Alabama who's getting the call.
South
I don't know. His
Alabama.
Name is Lopez. So.
I think also with Bill Belichick, I'm still waiting for Pablo Torre to be held accountable for when he said he wouldn't be surprised if Bill Belichick never coached a North Carolina game. And we all sat here saying that's kind of a crazy thing to say. I'm still waiting for that. But Pablo Torre.
How about just a simple... I was wrong from Pablo Torre. Has that come out yet?
When you say you were wrong about Luis Arraez, Pablo Torre will come back around.
I think this is more of a line of demarcation. Belichick's actually coaching a game.
Okay.
The Arraez thing is something that can be argued.
All right, you're right about that. The other. And that was just me taking a shot because it's been a while since.
Yeah, I don't appreciate it at all. Kike Hernandez, two-run single. Dalton rushing. He causing more problems. Two-run single. Dodgers 4, Reds 1, bottom of the fourth. Could be headed to a two-game deficit in the NL West, if that all holds up.
One more thing for you.
Okay.
Daniil.
Oh, yes. I heard about it, and I want to see it.
U.S. Open tennis player.
And he's won a U.S. Open before. Like, he was that good no more than 3-4 years ago. He won this tournament.
Yes.
So we're talking about a pretty high-level guy here.
He is a high-level guy.
Now he's in a number 10 or 11 in the world. He's kind of slipped back. But
apparently,
he loses his mind.
Loses his mind. And so here is what happened at the US Open.
If you're on the stream, you'll get to see this. If not, I'll try to describe. But Medvedev, he lost the other night in the first round. He's sitting on his chair at the side. He picks up his tennis racket and just annihilates it into the ground with two hands, slams it into his bag, slams it onto a table, back into his bag, keeps on slamming like the man is psycho. It's already broken, and he's still slamming it into the side.
He is. Oh, look at that thing. It's mangled.
It's completely mangled. He's holding it in both hands.
Apparently, this happens more often than we think.
He's a little bit of a kook. I didn't know. Oh, he's just slamming
it
a few more times.
He's doing it again.
Like, he's not even done. He just slammed it 6 more times. It's already broken.
He's still breaking it.
He wants it broken more.
He's really trying to break it, but the strings are keeping it together.
This is absolute. Like, they ought to bring the guys with the butterfly nets who carry, who race around.
Yeah, of course.
They ought to bring them out to try to find this guy. His wife is ashamed. She's walking out of the stadium.
Yeah, she's not watching this.
His wife is ashamed. Yeah. She's seen this act a few times.
She's gonna be.
Was the match over? Had he already lost, or was this just a? Do we know?
That's a fantastic question. Actually,
we don't know if he'd already lost or if this was.
Oh yeah, it was a loss. It was after his loss.
Okay, he already lost.
Okay. Yeah, there's another.
But that was. That was. And he was signed, what'd you say? Tennis came down with a big suspension or a fine today.
Oh, yeah, it was $42,500 or $42,500.
What he just did there is. There are 3-year-olds that have better control of their temper than that.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. But there was another part of this that he was in trouble for, and that was because he got a cameraman kicked out of the stadium. So here's kind of the situation last night before he went on to lose.
This is actually during the match, but it's in the last game, it looks like.
And so he tries to get
Ladies and gentlemen, because of the delay caused by an outside interference, first serve has been granted.
Oh, so, oh gosh, the umpire allowed a first serve, so Medvedev's now imploring the crowd to boo.
Yeah.
That decision.
Yes.
And now
he says something.
Oh, yeah.
You can't really hear him, but he
I don't know that we want to hear him.
He made a scene.
Here's the thing with Medvedev.
He said, are you a man? Are you a man? Why are you shaking? What's wrong, huh? Guys, he wants to leave. He gets paid by the match, not by the hour. Crowd then boos for 5 minutes straight.
Medvedev, unfortunately, gives tennis players a bad name because he just looks like a spoiled brat. He truly does. And
this goes for golfers, too, that do this.
Golfers who do this make golfers look bad.
Yeah, when they slam their clubs in the ground and throw them and just look dumb.
They helicopter them over the heads of pitchers.
Like
Robles did.
Yeah, that and
Campy. Dagoberto Campanaris, our guy.
Not Luis Campusano, but
no, Dagoberto Campanaris.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Yeah. I think most of these tennis guys and gals, just like the golfers, they have a lot of class. They respect the game. They appreciate that they were given the God-given ability to play it at this kind of a level. They certainly get frustrated, just like any athlete does, just like any weekender does. We can all sit here and be critical of these people for reacting, but we've all, at least exasperatedly tossed a club aside.
Oh,
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I can remember one specific moment where I hit a drive and it was just the last worst drive ever.
Duck hooking out of this picture.
I just threw my driver into a tree and I broke it, so that was my problem.
I try to drop mine before I can heave it. I'll just swing and the ball's going wayward.
Oh,
I'll just drop. I'll just drop the club.
That way I don't have to throw it anywhere. That's safe, yes.
Yeah, so we've all done this, and then we're critical of others and athletes at the highest level who do it. But this Medvedev,
it was a little much.
That's a lot much.
I mean, I think he may have hit his racket into something over 50 times.
Yeah. Easily. Is that the ball game? Is that the music for the ball game?
That's the music for the ball game.
All right. Dodgers 4, Reds 1, top of the fifth. So either the Reds rally or we fall two games back. Either way, we're all back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to discuss it on the roundtable. And then Tony rejoins Scraby and I tomorrow at 2. So...